Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. This is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
In the Midwest, softball is something of a hallowed thing for girls. Here in America's heartland, where so many girls are born and raised by generations of farm families, their bodies built for baling hay, their shoulders broad, their backs and hands strong, their muscles long and lean, like they were born to play ball, like they came out of the womb with gloves on their hands, cleats already digging into the dirt. Growing up in a small town where boys were boys and girls were girls, playing softball also meant being called a lesbian. This was the worst possible insult, one we worked hard to combat. It meant applying too much makeup, even and perhaps especially before games, making sure our hair was just right, straightened and sprayed at lockers between class, wearing short skirts and high heels and low-cut shirts on game days. All this to assure the boys, and the men, that even though we played softball, we were still girls, that we were sexy, available, and straight, that our bodies were objects for them to desire.
That's writer Melissa Falavino reading an excerpt from her essay Switch Hitter. It's part of her debut collection titled Tomboyland. Melissa was born and raised in working-class Wisconsin. She's a first-generation college graduate and a former high school softball star. Her collection grapples with her Dairyland upbringing and its impact on identity, gender, and class. Wisconsin Life host and producer Maureen McCollum caught up with Melissa to talk about Tomboyland. And she found the perfect spot to meet Melissa.
Oh my God, we are in my absolute favorite place on the planet, which is center field at Olbrich Park. I think it's field number 3.
Yes.
Sitting in center field in Packer chairs that Maureen brought. It is actually a perfect day. You can probably hear the crickets everywhere. And this is where I played softball for actually like many, many years. I played softball here when I was a kid. But then I played here again later as an adult. I played on a women's fast pitch league and center field was my position, so I feel like I am
like you're at home. One of the things that I really love about Switch Hitter, you take this one facet of your life and you do this deep identity dive while looking through the lens of sports and softball, and like who you were and who you've become when you look at sports. Can you explain why you decided to write that section?
Yeah, I mean, I started writing about softball and I wasn't really sure what I was writing about, you know? And this is how I enter all essays. I have a thing that I'm thinking about or that's obsessing me or a question that I have in my mind, and I start writing into it. I don't know where I'm going. And then suddenly, as if by magic, I figure out what it is I'm trying to do or what question I'm trying to ask. And I knew that I wanted to write about softball because it was such an important part of my life and I knew it was complex.
You were a big deal in the Mount Hora world of softball.
In the world of small town sports, I guess I was something of a big deal. You know, it was my life and it was my plan, and I was going to go play D1 softball at UW, and I got close and then totally failed and had this like this experience where I worked so hard and was a total perfectionist toward this one goal, and I was not used to not meeting my goals as a perfectionist, both academically and as an athlete when I was a kid. And, you know, I went to these tryouts at the UW-Madison, and I choked. And the whole trajectory of my life changed. You know, everything that I sort of expected I was going to do and be didn't happen. And I took this totally different route and became a writer. There's still some grief, though, you know, like, and I grieve that life, that playing the sport competitively like that, what that did for me as a kid. And so I knew that I wanted to write about that. But then I was like, oh, there's so much more here. So I get into the ways that we as girls, when we're young, we learn to perform under the male gaze. And even if it's not told to us explicitly, we learn it implicitly. And like everything that we do, maybe especially in a small town, about being desired and being attractive and being popular and being objects for boys and, you know, sometimes even adult men to want. And so, yeah, it got real dark for a while. Sure. And I was like, okay, we're just going to plumb those depths.
Yeah.
And it's pretty a pretty vulnerable piece. And there's
it
a lot
is.
Of things that I still am like freaked out to have in the world. And there are days and I'm like, why would I do that? Why would I write that? But but the cool thing has been having mostly, you know, predominantly women, a lot of queer women, you know, writing me and saying like, oh man, I identified so hard with this. And like, I feel like you were writing my story. And this, it's such a ubiquitous thing, girls playing sports, you know, but there's so much complexity there, especially within the realm of identity and the body and desire. So
one thing that really stuck with me is how you talked about how you were building your body to be a machine. And there was specifically when it came up in the high school weight room.
Yeah.
So you were building your body to be this strong muscle.
Yes.
And then at other times you were building your body to be a machine for sex and like finding your own power in whatever ways.
Yeah, you know, and that was a big part of it. Like the way that we sculpt our bodies to fit into the shape that we understand they need to be in order to be what we think is powerful. And it wasn't until much later in life when I started to inhabit my body in the way that I inhabit it now, which is like much less feminine, much more androgynously, and understanding that that was actually where I felt most powerful and where I felt most at home in my body. And so much of that was derby, was roller derby, and returning to softball and being like at home on the field again and feeling like, okay, I'm back in my domain, I'm standing in center field again. You know, it's just this like pure joy again, you know, like it was when I was a kid. So
let's talk about moths.
All right. Yeah, cool.
What I really like about this book is how you take some of these details about your life and things that maybe I would consider mundane in my own life, like an infestation of pantry moths. But I just love how you write about them in this like beautiful and eventually like very empathetic way. You know, most of us have had pantry moths, like they're gross.
Yeah.
You want to do what you can to get rid of them, but like you develop this relationship with them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I love my moths. I mean, I don't have them anymore. This was an old apartment, but
it's kind of good.
Yeah. I'm okay without them.
Yeah.
But you know, that piece I wrote after moving to New York, you know, that was the earliest one I wrote from the collection in the book. And I was really isolated and really alone and lonely, I guess, but not like, I kind of liked the loneliness, you know? Yeah, these moths showed up. And my roommates and I did the thing that you do when you get an infestation, which is you try to eradicate them. And yeah, I just had this experience one night where I was like in like a blind killing rampage. And I just sort of like had this moment of empathy for these like struggling little creatures. And I was like, that's interesting. And so I think I just started writing from that place. And they just sort of like accompanied me through the whole process of writing this piece. I was writing about them and they were like buzzing around my lamps in my bedroom as I wrote. And, you know, then one died in a candle and I just felt like this deep swell of grief and was like, wow, that was interesting.
Another thing that really sticks out to me in these essays is like you lay it all out there.
For better or worse.
It's all out there. And you and I recognize that most people in the world are extremely complex people. And sometimes we fall short in recognizing the complexities in one another. It's something I have to check myself.
Yeah.
When I'm, you know, interacting with a friend or family member or a complete stranger, like, okay, so what else is going on here? So, like, do you think it's important that more of us just understand the complexities in one another?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think that we are so, as, like, a country, you know, and as a world, we are so divided, and, you know, so in some respects, I feel like some of that division will never change. You know, there's just not going to be unity on some things, some issues, and some belief systems, you know. There just won't be. And part of that is what makes the world an interesting place. But I think that having empathy for people who don't believe the same things as you do, even if they make you, like, crazy, to, you know, if you've got like the relative or the friends who like have the political view that makes you crazy, there's a way to navigate that such that we're not enemies. Even in circumstances where like people don't believe that, for instance, gay people should get rights like straight people do, or like that trans people are real, I at once want to throttle them, you know, and never talk to them again. But there's part of me that is driven by this like need to sort of try to have a conversation and get them to understand what I understand in the hope that maybe they will change their mind about certain things, or if not change their mind, then just have a better understanding of the complexities of people, and that beyond that, none of us is one thing nor the other, that we are all this multitude of things, and we're all just trying to survive and live on this planet and not die, you know? And like, that's what we're trying to do here, you know? And like,
keep on trucking.
Yeah. And if we take some time to talk to people or read stories or listen to people tell their stories, we might learn something. And that doesn't mean that we're always going to reconcile, you know? Like, there are still people in this world who I'm not going to ever be friends with, you know? But maybe someone out there will read my book and understand something that they didn't before. About the complexities of life and like one human body.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for doing this. This has been amazing.
Thank you for having me. This has literally been my favorite interview ever and pretty much the best day of my life. I mean, this is all I ever want to do.
Melissa Falavino is the author of the essay collection Tomboyland. She spoke with Wisconsin Life host Maureen McCollum. Find out more about Melissa at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Cristela Alonso, Latif Nasser, and Melissa Falavino. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Special thanks to guest interviewer Maureen McCollum.
Yeah, we call her our maestro of motivation.
Also, a special thanks to producer Brad Kohlberg.
Act civilized! We got company!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
He's got every high-tech thing you'll ever need.
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
Whoa! Almost makes me feel sorry for the guy. Not really!
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. Take care and stay safe. I'm Doug Gordon.
You could talk a snowmobile into an air conditioner.